You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where I won't be jumping backwards over any moving vehicles. Although I wish I could. I'm your host, Justin Eblinski. And if you like controversy, apparently this is the episode. I don't know how I ended up on Daniel's side over Star Wars, but it looks like here I am. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
The hot take edition. Yeah, we're going to be contrarians on the popularity of a star, or not the popularity, on the quality of a Star Wars movie. This is a certain coming together of forces, if you will.
Exactly, especially Daniel, me, who you know me in Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. You have all the wrong takes on Star Wars except for this one.
So do I just have Star Wars contrarian in my DNA? Is that what this is?
It's the
just whatever the opposite is, I naturally do it?
That's right. The midichlorians are telling you what to say and do.
But is... No, I mean, I had the normal take on The Last Jedi, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Trash. Yes. Trash.
I think I'm the only one, though, who, like, really goes after it for the anti-male stuff. Like, even to this day, when I start bringing that up, people are like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you mean where they shit on Poe for the entire movie? That part? Did you miss all of that?
Right. Exactly. So, good takes there, and we'll get to our hot takes later on.
But I have tried to avoid hot takes. Like, I don't even like the concept of hot takes. When did that become a term? I've tried to avoid doing that because I think that people don't think about things. They just spout off, and it becomes this idea of, like, a hot take. And now we're doing it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm sort of making fun of it because if the mainstream opinion is that this looks like a terrible movie, then we would be, you know, doing the hot take to defend it. So I'm a bit poking a bit fun at it.
Bit of fun. Okay, so we're accidentally doing a hot take here.
That's right.
Got it. Also joining us from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, there's other things other than Star Wars to talk about, but apparently we're going to talk about Star Wars this week.
No.
There isn't, and if everyone was a Patreon supporter and they were in the Discord chat this week, they would have saw that on Friday the news was so bad this week that I wrote in to the Patreon supporters. I said, can anyone help me find some news? Because this is going to be 90% Star Wars this week.
As it should be every week.
So thanks to Midsider Megan for all her help breaking the news with me. We'll give you a production credit on the midside.com/podcast this week.
Here we go, launching her career.
I think she probably does something more productive and helpful for the world than this. Just a guess.
If she does anything, then yes. Correct.
All right, let's talk about a bunch of other people who weren't being productive or helpful for this world this week. Or were they? I think that's kind of the question of all the news stories. Let's ask it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Before we get to some of the farciest news of the year so far, let's first talk about patreon.com/themidside. Patreon is a platform where you, our loyal listeners, can choose to give us a couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content. It helps us immensely, and we sincerely appreciate it. And sometimes, even sometimes, we release exclusive content on patreon.com/themidside. Trump this week, in one of his more Trumpian sentiments, said that he might consider sending all these illegal immigrants coming over the border to sanctuary cities, prompting U.S. mayors to accept such an offer as a battle over border security. Frustrated by rising numbers of undocumented immigrants arriving at the southern border and a failure to get Congress to fully fund his border wall, Trump taunted Democrats by dangling the possibility of an influx of illegal immigrants into their communities. Quote, this is the president. Due to the fact that Democrats are unwilling to change our very dangerous immigration laws, we are indeed, as reported, giving strong considerations to placing illegal immigrants in sanctuary cities only. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney responded in a statement, quote, while the Trump administration's proposal shows their disdain to basic human dignity, the city would be prepared to welcome these immigrants just as we have embraced our immigrant communities for decades.
So let me get this straight. Sending them to Philadelphia is a disdain to human dignity. I agree.
If you have been to Philadelphia, that is the truest statement you have ever heard.
Yeah, that's not even like controversial or funny. That's just like, yep, guy knows the city.
That's correct. In Chicago, Mayor Rahm Emanuel said in a statement, quote, we would welcome these immigrants with open arms, just as we welcome Syrian refugees, just as we welcomed Puerto Ricans displaced by Hurricane Maria, and just as we welcomed other unpronounceable refugees fleeing from horrible countries. I paraphrased the last bit. Of course, sanctuary cities are local jurisdictions that generally don't give undocumented immigrants safe harbor. Jesus Christ, that do give undocumented immigrants safe harbor by refusing to use their resources to help federal immigration enforcement and deportation. So, Justin, good idea or his greatest idea?
Okay, good. I'm glad you framed it that way, because are these people just fighting Trump because they're so used to fighting Trump? And what I mean by that is, if I look at the way the United States was intended to be constructed, the idea that you have a bunch of different, basically, countries that are together as states, and that, you know, the countries have their different cultures and their different beliefs. Like, you know, in Colorado and Washington and California, weed, you can smoke it legally. In other places, you can't. You know,
federalism.
Yeah, federalism. Exactly. Slavery is illegal in some places and not in other places. Okay, slavery is illegal everywhere.
What?
What? You get the point I'm making, right? The point is, you're supposed to have different places. So then, would it not be logical for the person who is in charge of running all of these places to go, well, we have a problem in these places where they don't want illegal immigrants, and we have a problem in these other places where they want illegal immigrants. Why don't we just send all the illegal immigrants there? That just seems like logical. That seems logical to me. However, that does disrespect the humanity of the illegal immigrants. And what I mean by that is, maybe they don't want to go to Chicago. Maybe they don't want to go to Philadelphia. I can understand why you wouldn't want to go to either of those cities. I mean,
yeah, if you don't want to be murdered, for instance.
Right. You don't want to be murdered. You don't want to deal with the cold. I get it. I get why you wouldn't want to go to
either of
those cities.
You know, we're joking around about that, but isn't it safer in Chicago than it is in border towns in Mexico? I mean, let's be honest here. It is bad in Chicago for America, but murder rates are much, much higher in parts of Central America.
I guess it depends on what part of Chicago. If we're dropping them off on the south side, then
let's put that asterisk on our show in general, right? When we talk about these things, even like when I dump on California and how terrible it is, it's like California is terrible for America.
Exactly.
I think that's generally true of everything we're saying on this show. It's just your choice of where you want to live in America. And that's the thing. Like, I understand where Trump's coming from, and it's a good idea. It's such a good idea. I want to go to illegal immigrants and shake them and say, why aren't you just going to these cities already? Why would you go to a place where they don't want you when there are plenty of places that want you and are going to make things easy for you? I don't understand that. So it's
how
one of these things.
How confused would that immigrant be?
I know. Especially if it's a child.
Why is this angry Bostonian shaking me?
And that's how Justin got arrested for shaking a baby.
Sudden infant immigration syndrome. They should be doing it themselves, so I get why Trump wants to do it. But at the same time, the basic tenet of America is you get to do what you want. So there's a delicate balance here between respecting individual rights and doing what makes logical sense. But on the other hand, it's respecting the rights of the citizens in the state who don't want the illegal immigrants. So it's respecting their individual rights as well. So where is the balance here?
Now, William, there's certainly some questions about efficiency here, right? So there would be some cost to busing migrants from border towns to San Francisco or Philadelphia or Chicago or wherever else. But let's say we could solve the efficiency issues. Is there something I'm missing about this plan? Because otherwise, it just seems to me like the ideal compromise.
Yeah, I think I see where you're coming from. I think the worry I have is that both the left and Trump have this view of migrants and immigrants, just like South Park, if you remember the Tucker Gerbs episode.
The Goobacks episode?
Yeah, they're just mindless, right? They just they have no volition. They just are, they go with the flow. They make no decisions. People who come to this country, they're going somewhere, right? Now, some of them happen to be going to commit crime, and that's the problem that Trump keeps pointing out. But to the left, there's no distinction there, right? It's just these are just bodies that could be used to get more money. So where they are seems like an important thing to them, right? Like they should want them in their cities because it means more money. They get to have more power and more money. So yeah, I think this, on the surface, it looks like a perfect compromise.
I'm going to stop you right there because the reason they want these people in states that they're not wanted in is because they want to turn the red states blue because they want total domination of the entire continent. Let's be clear about that. That's why the left is fighting against this, because they want them to stay where they're not wanted so they could use that to turn the tide of the votes there. That's the entire reason they're upset.
Now, yes, all of that. William, let's assume that like the federal government, and specifically Trump in particular, is not going to like put devices on their legs, sort of like those locks on supermarket carts where if you cross the yellow line, the wheels just lock up. Like, they're not going to put these devices on people's legs so their legs stop working when they go outside of these cities, right? They're just sort of dropping them off there and saying, here's your starting point. And while I get that immigrants have places to go, there's nothing stopping them from going where they want to go from these cities, and it's no different than coming into the country any place, right? You come to a certain place and then you travel to another place, but you have to go through a port of entry in a specific location. So I don't see what the issue is with this plan. I mean, it might be kind of a Trumpian sort of publicity threat or whatever it is, but kind of works for me. I don't know.
So you're saying he's betting on the fact that Mexicans are lazy? I'm not saying they are. I'm saying that's what he's betting on, that they're going to stay in the cities he puts them in.
No, I don't think that's what he's betting on. I hope not.
Let's look at this, though, president, a little bit meta for a second. Like, as a strategy, asking people who are virtue signaling to actually do the thing that they're virtue signaling, is that a good strategy? Right, because these cities have been virtue signaling that they want more immigration, but they don't really, right? They don't take actions. They're not advertising. If San Francisco, instead of passing resolutions in their city council, were actually going down and putting up signs and maps of how to get to San Francisco down in San Diego, then I would believe them, right? I would believe them that they wanted this. If they were actually paying to have buses or putting them on the coast train, whatever it's called, to get up the coast to San Francisco, then I would believe them, right? But they're all they do is just pass resolutions, right? But if Trump is going to call them out, is that a good strategy?
It depends on what your goal is, and if his goal is re-election, then yes, it's the perfect strategy, because the easiest way to call someone out on their chest puffing is to dare them to do it, and that's what he's doing. He's trying to expose them as hypocrites and liars. So also, if he's trying to rally his base, he's done it.
Like, even inadvertently, isn't this better for the immigrants than staying in places where they're not wanted, where they are more likely to be deported? I mean, at least not staying, but starting off in, I should say.
Well, that's what I said. Why would you not, as an immigrant, just go to these cities anyway? Why does Trump need to tell you to go there?
Just as a counter-argument. That have
social programs for them?
Just as a counter-argument, aren't you saying... let's look at it from two perspectives. First, the immigrant's perspective. Like, first of all, I'm not buying the argument that San Francisco would make, which is, well, of course we want to get them out of racist Texas, right? Like, that would be their argument, right? And I don't buy that. But if you, like, where would you rather have someone become Americanized? In San Francisco or in Texas? How are you going to generate a better, more civilized, more individual rights respecting American? By having them go through San Francisco or go through, you know, Waco, Texas?
Which parts of Texas? I guess Waco? Fine.
Yeah.
But
you see what I'm saying, right? It's like, is this really a good long-term strategy?
Yeah, I think I get that point. Again, I don't know how many people will stay in the given cities that they're dropped off in. My thinking is simply, it seems to me like almost like a safer start for them than being in places that are more openly hostile toward them.
I think the point I'm trying to make, and again, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but I think there's some truth here. Is San Francisco safer for you mentally, physically, or spiritually? And I don't know that that's a given, right? Like,
and
it's a terrible, terrible
saying.
City, and with
right.
lots of terrible ideas.
Right, and from a culture war standpoint, you're worried about the longer ideological culture war and exposing them to those harmful ideas, and I get that.
Yeah, they're just going to be exposed to the victim mentality and be indoctrinated right. into the everyone that's not on the left coast is racist.
Right. But as sort of a cognate to Daniel's point, if they can move anywhere, right, if we're not putting tattoos or microchips on them where if they walk outside the border that they start like beeping tremendously, then they can go anywhere they want. And then aren't we filtering basically? Because the ones that leave because they want to go to where more individual rights are respected and there's more freedom.
So after the earthquake, we'll be fine. After California splits off into the ocean,
you're the one who talked about them dying. I didn't talk about anyone dying. I'm saying that...
I didn't say they would die. I just said they'd be, you know, out in the ocean.
Yeah, but culture war aside, because the culture war thing, this is a much longer discussion, probably not for today, but maybe for sometime else. Like, the culture war thing can sometimes, to me, get very collectivist in its sort of thing. Like, we have this specific culture that we want to protect and sort of, you know, individual ideas and their choices be damned because we need to protect the culture. And I don't know what that means a lot of times. And I'm not saying that's the argument you're making, William, or, you know, or that you really believe, but sometimes that's how it comes off to me when we start discussing culture wars. So I'm just trying to think of, like, if I were trying to move somewhere and my only means for doing it were illegally, i.e. I was very poor, etc., it seems to me that I would much rather be in a city that wants me there, much rather be in a city that has programs for me, much rather be in a city where I'm not at least in danger of immediately being sent back, than the opposite. So in thinking very selfishly from an immigrant's point of view, I don't know. Maybe there's something I'm missing, though. And if
okay,
I am, please, Midsiders, tweet at Donald Trump, not me. Thank you.
To fold your point into my point, would you then use the resources in that city to build yourself up so then you could legally immigrate to the cities where there are more freedom and more individualism?
Probably. I mean, if I'm everything I am now, except that I'm a dirt poor immigrant whose life has been turned upside down by some economic disaster or natural disaster or something. Yeah, I mean, I certainly would want to go somewhere where rights are more respected. But how about the rights of immigrants? How about the rights of people to move around freely? That's a natural right that some of these places we're talking about, like Waco, Texas, for instance, aren't necessarily respecting.
Right, but I was just adding to my filtering point where you would use the resources of these other places to go where you want to go. So that was just making my point.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's all highly contextual, but...
You're right. It's contextual, and it's very, very gray is the thing. It's the whole thing with this immigration issue in general is it's gray.
Certainly. Speaking of gray, no, I got nothing. Newsweek reports that Donald Trump Jr. has praised Candace Owens, who is a right-wing activist, for defending her Hitler comments after being dragged in front of Congress and questioned about them. So this is a story that's all over the place because it's Newsweek and they're terrible at journalism. But it starts off as Donald J. Trump Jr. has praised right-wing activist Candace Owens for her appearance on Capitol Hill, during which she defended her comments about nationalism and Adolf Hitler. I'm going to pause here for a moment because there is a certain journalistic thing here that we now have to dissect before I move forward, which is that you can tell that this story is not going to present a full contextual picture because of the first sentence. And in fact, because of the first subordinate clause at the end of the sentence, during which she defended her comments about nationalism and Adolf Hitler. Justin, if I say something like Adolf Hitler, it was a horrible human being, and then I defended those comments, you could write the exact same sentence here about me if I was asked about them, during which he defended his comments about nationalism and Adolf Hitler. It doesn't give you any context. In fact, the entire point of the article is that there's no context to these comments. And then the article goes and commits the error of dropping context.
Well, it's coming from a biased perspective. And what it is they're assuming you're going to hear Donald Trump Jr., Candace Owens, and think, oh, they must have been defending Donald Trump. I went one step further in my head. I was already there with where they were going in their head. See, they've done it to me.
But
no, that's what they're going for. They want you to think, oh, she must have been defending Hitler. Oh, Trump's like Hitler. She's defending Trump. Trump's like Hitler.
I just want to point out, before we even get into the meat of this article, that this is trash journalism. It is trash. And if you read stuff like this, and, you know, she defended her comments about nationalism and Adolf Hitler, and it makes you assume that she had something positive to say about Adolf Hitler, you're reading trash journalism. So you should know that. Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually be really, really honest right now with the insiders out there. I read this headline and assumed she said something negative about Hitler, and they were doing exactly that with the headline and with the story, and I honestly haven't even read the story. I'm just hoping Daniel reads the Candace Owen quote.
Oh no, she loves him. She said she wishes he was president now.
Okay. Did she?
Okay. No, just kidding.
Okay.
Oh. Owens, 29.
What's a
director of communications at the conservative group Turning Point USA, which is not a group I particularly like either, appeared as a witness in front of the House Judiciary Committee on Tuesday during a hearing on hate crimes and white nationalism. Representative Ted Lieu of California played a clip of the comments made by Owens regarding Hitler in December while she was promoting her organization in London. Owens, love these. You also got to love these parentheticals, which have nothing to do with anything except that they're going to tie Hitler comments to whatever the parenthetical is. So the parenthetical is Owens, comma, who supports President Donald Trump, comma,
proving my point,
took her remarks out of context and said she was offended by his use of them. Donald J. Trump Jr. tweeted out, "Well done, Candace Owens. Great to see someone call out the Dems on their purposeful manipulation of facts for their narrative." So here's the whole thing. During the hearing, Lieu said he did not know Owens and would not try to characterize her, but he's going to let her speak for herself. He then played a 30-second clip of a statement she made about Adolf Hitler, in which she said this. This was the 30-second clip transcribed. Quote, "I actually don't have any problems at all with the word nationalism. I think that the definition gets poisoned by leaders that actually want globalism. Globalism is what I don't want. So when you think about whenever we say nationalism, the first thing people think about, at least in America, is Hitler. You know, he was a national socialist. But if But if Hitler just wanted to make Germany great and have things run well, okay, fine. The problem is that he had dreams outside of Germany. He wanted to globalize. He wanted everyone to be German, everybody to be speaking German. End quote. Owens, of course, responded very angrily, saying that he took things out of context, but we'll get into that a little bit in a moment. Justin, can you unpack what the heck is going on here with her comment and right, wrong, upside down, left, right, whatever?
What she was trying to say? That's what you want me to figure out here?
Well, she's a little, more than a little muddled here, but she's trying to make a point about nationalism, right?
Right, she's trying to differentiate between taking care of shit in your own country versus worrying about what's going on everywhere else and trying to control the world. It's weirdly a libertarian point, even though it's not a libertarian position at all, because it's talking about like having a strong national government and national culture that's reinforced, basically. Or is what it seems to be saying. So, it's the libertarian perspective of we're not going to be the world policemen, which, you know, that's what Hitler decided to do, to be the moral policeman of the entire world, to say, you know, we're the master race, we deserve to dominate the entire world. But she's saying for America, for a country on its own, to want to make its own country great within its borders, there's no problem with that. The issue is, and this is to be more fair to the left with how they're interpreting this, the left has made nationalism such a negative buzzword that they're automatically assuming that she's saying that white people are the master race and they should be the master race within America as well. And if we want to do that in America, that's no problem. So they're package dealing a lot of what she's saying, which is why both sides are very confused. But it's also they're very confused because they're talking collectivism at one another. So you can't, this is a conversation you can't even have. So this fucked up journalism, this fucked up interpretation of Candace Owens comes from her talking in a fucked up way because she's talking collectivistically as well. And when you have two sides yelling at each other about collectivism, this is what you end up with. No, our collectivist side is right. No, your collectivist side is racist because it's not our collectivist side. Am I wrong? Do you guys see anything different here?
Well, Daniel, I think to be fair, when you give us more of the context, like, this while definitely muddled, like, the point she's making is she's pointing towards a valid point, right? She's pointing towards a point that Justin's already kind of described. I think the issue here is when you have these two tribalistic camps, they have these words mean things to them. They call up particulars to them that for them, the context does not matter, right? That they've taken dropping yes. context as a method of quote unquote thinking, right? This comes to the accusation constantly of dog whistling, right? You cannot say certain words. You cannot make the okay sign with your hand without it automatically being racist. Context be damned. Every person in the world ever, for all time, who has made the okay sign, it is now racist.
Yes. Absolutely.
Even Barack Obama in all those pictures.
Yeah, even Barack Obama.
So then, William, I'm going to ask Daniel a question based upon what you're saying. Wouldn't it then, Daniel, from a professional communication standpoint, to be a good communicator, would it not then be rational to never bring up Hitler again to make a point? I understand why she did, but wouldn't it be like, your point was fine, just don't bring Hitler into it? Like, wouldn't you be, if you were her communication advisor, if you were anyone's communication advisor on the right, would you just say, don't say Hitler anymore? Don't.
Well, of course, but the issue here is one in which she's trying to address it. I don't think she's addressing it well. I don't agree with her point, but she is trying to address a point about the word nationalism. And you can't really discuss the word nationalism without addressing Adolf Hitler. You just can't if you're going to be intellectually honest about it. So I will give it to her that she is trying to give what she considers to be an intellectually honest answer, which I think ultimately fails on its merits for any number of reasons, not the least of which is that nationalism is not the correct way to pursue a government.
Well, and this is the issue as well, Daniel, is as much as Donald Trump and his whole campaign and his whole rally of the right tried to be, we are taking back the conversation, this is a perfect example of, on the right, they are still letting the left set the premises of the debate.
Yes, and that's a good segue, because this is a little bit of a let's call it a bad Candace, good Candace article.
Which is funny because...
Bad Kanye, good Kanye.
Right, which is funny because I told Michael, Midsider Michael actually sent this story to me, and he's like, you know who Candace Owens is, right? I was like, I've heard the name, but I don't know who she is. He's like, even in relation to Kanye West, because I guess Kanye tried to be friends with her and then gave up on it. So that's really funny.
I didn't even know that. But so so her idea's likely terrible. I'd need to know more. I don't really know her that well, but defending nationalism, bad. Silly nonsense. But making sure that you don't concede any high ground to the people who are mischaracterizing you, to the people who are purposely trying to make you look bad by connecting you with horrible things, taking your words out of context, etc., and having some righteous indignation about that, sort of Breitbart-esque, Andrew Breitbart, not Breitbart.com, Andrew Breitbart-esque righteous indignation about it, I think is excellent on her part. And so she replied very angrily during this heated hearing, and she said, quote, I think it's pretty apparent that Mr. Liu believes that black people are stupid and will not pursue the full clip in its entirety. He purposely presented an extracted clip, she said. The chairman of the committee, Democrat Jerry Nadler said it was improper for the witness to disparage a committee member, but in fact incorrectly suggested that she had called him stupid, when in fact she said he thinks that black people must be stupid. So
wait, what race is he?
He's white.
Oh, because his last name is Liu and he's from California. Whenever
oh,
I hear about
Liu is, I think, Asian. I thought you meant Jerry Nadler.
Oh, well, this whole story, I've been picturing Tyrion Liu, the old coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, who's a black guy. So that's what I've been picturing this whole story, just because of that.
Yeah, I don't know, though. I don't know anything. So
if he's Liu and he's from Asia, you're from Asia. He's California, he's probably Asian.
Southern California. As I said, he's assuming that black people will not go pursue the full two-hour clip, and he purposely extracted, he cut off, and you didn't hear the question that was asked of me. So, she went on in other responses to talk about the fact that clearly Hitler was a horrible person, and she makes the argument that Hitler was in fact not a nationalist, even if he called himself that, because no nationalist would kill their own people. Do whatever you will with that argument. The point being that I think when people mischaracterize you, you should have this moral certitude, and you should take a bit of a fiery stance and don't give any sanction to this, because what they're doing is totally dishonest. Take your argument, believe in your argument, and defend yourself, and don't capitulate to these people. Don't capitulate to woke social justice nonsense. Always take the moral high ground if you believe you have it, and defend yourself. Gentlemen?
Hear, hear. I mean, agreed. I think that's probably the one good thing that's come out of Trump is he's taught people how to not back down. He's shown how to not back down.
Yeah, don't apologize and say, oh, I shouldn't have brought up Hitler. Yeah, that's my bad. Yeah, you probably shouldn't have. That was dumb. But you were making a point. Maybe you made it ineloquently, but you were making a point. Believe in your point, even if your point is stupid.
Well, okay. I think you can do both. I can be like, look, maybe I shouldn't have mentioned Hitler. Maybe that was ineloquent. But you are latching onto that to misportray what I was trying to say, and you are doing that willfully. I think if you were able to do that, I think that that would woo people like us as well, because it would be like, oh, wow, you can self-assess, and you can call out the other side. That's pretty good. Right now, it just sounds like two idiots yelling at each other to me. So,
well, for the most part. So, Midsiders, take whatever you will out of that story and mine the little tiny bits of gold nuggets out of it. And then let's move on with our lives. Speaking of little tiny gold nuggets, not at all. For any of you who keep up with country music, it was all the woke rage this week as Lil Nas X's smash hit makes country wonder if rap is friend or foe yet again. So, Over the last few weeks, a song by the name of Old Town Road, which the New York Times describes as a strutting and lightheartedly comedic country rap tune by the previously unknown 20-year-old rapper Lil Nas X, that's L-I-L space N-A-S space the letter X, has lived an improbable number of lives. It in fact began as a Hail Mary pass by a college dropout, hoping music might save him from having to go back to school. But in the way that the internet can rapidly make and remake something, morphing meaning in real time, Lil Nas X's track became something different. Almost every few days on its path from SoundCloud obscurity to pop ubiquity. He's been named a savvy troll, a manipulator of streaming algorithms, a meme theme, a battering ram to genre barriers, a trigger of music biz discord, a David suffering at the hands of Goliath, a socio-cultural rallying point, and eventually a site cross-cultural kumbaya. That is one of the worst paragraphs in all of journalism, just so you know. And now it's likely to be one of the most emblematic songs of the year. And on April 8th, Old Town Road became the number one song in the country, capping a startling ascent that demonstrates what can happen when viral engineering meets lightning rod controversy meets the pop uncanny. So the controversy comes from the fact that it was charting on the country music charts and then was removed for not being country enough. Essentially, this, of course, created a deep rallying cry from people across various woke spectrums, and Billy Ray Cyrus got involved and helped re-record part of the song featuring a verse by him, which got it onto the country radio stations, which then got it on Billboard's country airplay chart. But the article points out that there's a long history of sort of weird genre crossing between country and whatever, and the article tries to set it up essentially like this, Justin, which is that country is this old, established, white, male genre that won't let all these young, diverse people into a genre. What's wrong with country? My question to you, first and foremost, Justin, is what the hell is wrong with people that they think this song is good?
They don't think this song is good, and you know that, Daniel. You know why they're rallying around this song. Why are they rallying around this song?
Because it's a young person of color who's attempting to take down the white patriarchal country establishment.
Correct. It's all just virtue signaling. All this support of this song is virtue signaling. And I listened to it, and I had the same reaction you did, that this is a terrible song.
It's not even a song. Look, I don't like rap. I think rap, for the most part, is atrocious. But there is some rap that is legitimately music. It's just music I don't like. This is not music. This is, at best, a ditty.
A P Diddy?
A terrible Diddy.
A T Diddy.
And it's mostly a joke. I mean, it's not even to the level of Weird Al, which is art, by the way.
Right, but there's context you're missing, to be fair. I mean, not to be fair to say it's a good song or it is a song, but the context you're missing is this is what a lot of popular rap and what a lot of the SoundCloud rap that Eminem totally roasted on his last album is nowadays. This is what's passing for art in today's culture. It's largely, I didn't expect to go down this tangent, but we're here. So I'm going down this this new country road, I suppose you could say. You know how we always talk about the way social media has made it so you can find these communities in a way you couldn't before, and it makes these communities sort of reified in the sense that they think there's more reality behind their inane beliefs than ever. Well, it's the same thing with art. It's a lot easier for, because there are no quote-unquote gatekeepers anymore, these type of effortless art processes that create these shitty products to find more of a following nowadays. Because you don't have the gatekeepers trying to help us see what is good. And now, you know, we can go the other way. We can talk about how there's the tyranny of the gatekeepers who's keeping the new good stuff out, as we've seen, you know, with Zack Snyder, with the whole Justice League issue, with the whole Warner Brothers issue with Geoff Johns and all of that. So I don't want to go to the other side and say what we need completely back is the gatekeepers. But we've gone to the other side. We've gone completely, the balance is out the other way. It's completely now that there are no gatekeepers and anyone can just put any crap out there. And not only that, we've been educated in a way that in a society, theoretically, where everyone is educated enough that they can be a good consumer. And when I say good, I mean an intelligent, selfish consumer, then this could, that theoretically could work. But because no one's educated, it's all this social justice, it's all this selflessness, it's all this secondhandedness, it makes it easier for crap to rise to the top. And then you end up with this, where it's virtual signaling nonsense. And I heard this song, and to go back, you know, on the road more Taken or less Taken, I don't know. My fucking Robert Frost metaphor is dead right now. I don't know how to use this. But to go back to my original point, has anyone not heard of Cowboy Troy? Cowboy Troy has been trying to do country rap for years, and he has some decent songs, but he doesn't go against the establishment. He went in with Big and Rich, to the, you know, the biggest white country stars, and that's how he got somewhat some fame and some notoriety. And, you know, Tim McGraw supported him, so he wasn't going against it. And it, I can't imagine, like, I was just listening to this, the song, and I go, man, you know, Cowboy Troy's not great. He's average at best. But you, he's got to be upset that he's put in all this effort, and because he didn't virtue signal, he didn't do social justice, he was attacked. And also, this idea of trying to destroy country music for being anti-black people has been around forever. I don't know if you remember, Daniel, when we lived in the South, we lived in South Carolina, this was an idea they were battling too. And they're not, look, they're not anti-black people. They're anti-people coming in and trying to change country music to not be country music. That's the problem. The reason people like Tim McGraw supported Cowboy Troy is because Cowboy Troy was adding rap to country, but he wasn't trying to deviate from what country is. Again, Midsider Megan sent me an interesting video, and hopefully she can share it in the general chat for everyone and in the Patreon exclusive chat about these snap tracks being used as beats for country music, and it's not country music. It's like I said, it's no different than any of the SoundCloud rap. It's what happened with that, yeah, that video you shared, William, about pop punk, how pop punk and emo is now becoming emo rap because these kids don't want to put in the effort of being in bands anymore. If you go and you do country music, you'll be supported. Darius Rucker of Hootie and the Blowfish, who went to the University of South Carolina, fuck the Gamecocks, but love Hootie and the Blowfish. Darius Rucker is black, and he was a celebrated and successful country music artist when he made actual country music.
Yeah, so, William, perhaps I'm just too oddly epistemologically oriented, but I think things are things. I know that's a radical notion nowadays, that, you know, a thing is what a thing is, but honestly, my first thought in listening to Lil Nas X's Diddy...
Also, the names these people have suck. Can you people give yourself actual names?
It's just not country. Like, it's not even close. I mean, because you put on a fake twang doesn't make it a country song. In fact, it's just a joke to me. Am I just being too hard line here with this? Is all this a little more fluid than what I'm making it out to be?
Gender fluid.
Yeah. I think it's people have been complaining about country music not being country music anymore for hundreds of years. That being said, there is something different going on. I think the click track video that you mentioned is a good angle and breakdown of this. Country, pop country is no different than pop music, except for the accent. And that's been true for a while. And so it follows
Taylor Swift.
Yeah, it follows the latest trend, right? Like, whatever the latest trend in pop music, it's just a couple months, maybe a year behind on those. I mean, we all grew up when, if you remember, I Swear was a country song, and then all of a sudden it was an R&B song, right? Like, we know these things happen, that country music is treated by the music labels as like music from another country. And so if something gets popular in country music, then they just bring it over to pop. Or if pop has a trend, they'll manufacture it into country, you know, they'll put a cowboy hat on it and put it on the country charts. So, but it is disappointing, to Justin's point, that folks that are fans of country music are creating, or creators of country music, are falling into that trap too. Like, there's a way to take new things and mix it in without violating what country music is. And country music isn't about an accent or an instrumentation. It's about storytelling. That's what it's always been about. It's been a it has its roots in bluegrass and folk music, and so it is very much on storytelling. What pop music today has any storytelling?
I don't listen to pop music, Justin.
Eminem's Kamikaze album, which is why it did so well.
It's rare, right? And but country music has typically been about storytelling, but not pop country. And so this doesn't surprise me, but it is.
Now. Taylor Swift tells plenty of stories about her exes.
Now, I have another question for both of you. Answer in whatever order you will. But why is this all One Direction? And what I mean by that is not the horrible boy band, but what I mean is...
I was really confused. I was like, I don't know how to answer that.
Why is it all country has to change to become a melting pot of genres and whatever, and why not rap? Like, where is the... Why can't this just be twangy rap? Why can't it be, you know, instead of country rap, rap country or whatever? Why aren't we talking about moving the other direction?
Well, Daniel, that's the dirty little secret. I grew up in flyover country, right? You know what we listened to growing up? It was rap and country. That is what the collective listened to. And I'm not saying that's what I listen to. I listen to pop punk because, you know, I'm cool.
It's good, but, yeah.
but that's what people were listening to, right? Like, it wasn't... It's not odd to, you know, meet someone from, like, the backwoods of Kentucky or West Virginia, and they're going to have rap albums and they're going to have country albums. That's just... That's how things were when I grew up. And
well,
that's
come
how
on,
things are
William.
Today.
Where are you from? I'm going to give you a chance. Name one artist who's relevant to what you're saying.
One? I don't know what you mean. I don't know
Kid
where
Rock?
You're trying to go. Yeah, Kid Rock. Okay.
Okay,
what, relevant
from Detroit?
To yeah.
Right. That's exactly... I mean, that's rap country. I mean, Bubba Sparks did rap with country influence. It's been out there, but what are both these people? They're white. Daniel, you know the answer to this question. It's what you said at the top of the story. They see this as white. They see this as the patriarchy, and they see it as a way of winning the social justice campaign. It's how they've been doing this before social justice became a thing. It's how social justice became a thing. By attacking the concretes, they made the abstract a reality. By attacking the concrete of country music for years, notice how you go anywhere else besides the flyover states, besides South Carolina. You go to Boston, you go to New York, you go to LA especially, and what do they say about country music, Daniel?
It's for hillbillies.
Right, they say it's terrible. They say it's not good music. But then you fucking actually put on good country music for them, and they're like, wow, this isn't bad. This is pretty good. And now there's a whole Stagecoach Festival that people in Orange County go to. It's one of those things that they create it. They create this idea that, as we were talking about in the last story, you just say country music, and people automatically snap to, it's negative, it sucks, it's racist, so that the social justice stuff can be smuggled in, and we end up where we are.
I think Hispanics outnumber white people at Stagecoach like 9-1. So
probably
it does.
I mean,
it does.
That's one of these things where I talk about Mexicans and Catholicism. A lot of it doesn't make sense that Mexicans in California support the leftist agenda when you look at what they actually supposedly believe. They go to Stagecoach and they're Catholic and they vote Democrat. It doesn't make sense.
None of it makes sense to me. Well, speaking of not making sense, we got to move through the news here, guys. We're spending a lot of time on country music. When we got
Daniel's
Julian
like,
Assange
why would we
about.
Talk about country music when there's a new Star Wars trailer?
That's right. I'm so ready to talk about Star Wars. I want to blow through the rest of this, but it is Julian Assange, so it takes some careful analysis here, which we will not give it. Once upon a time, this is a CNN article, which is why it begins with once upon a time, because it's all a fairy tale. The ethical debates around journalism were comparatively simple, beginning with the most basic question of all, who is a journalist? But here in 2019, nothing about Julian Assange is simple. Looking like a befuddled Old Testament prophet, the WikiLeaks founder was dragged out of the Ecuadorian embassy in London on Thursday to a new form of captivity, and to challenge journalists around the world as to whether he is a hero deserving their support, or a villain for whom few would weep tears if he spent the rest of his life in a jail cell. Why the polarized difference? So, obviously Julian Assange is the mastermind and founder of WikiLeaks, which has leaked such classified documents as Iraq war stuff, Hillary Clinton's emails, and any number of things that hits both at the right and left. And the question sort of here is he a hero in the sense that he's doing journalistic work just like, say, the journalists in the Pentagon Papers did by releasing classified papers that showed corruption in the military? Or is he a villain by endangering people and going using tactics that no real journalist would ever use and should he be prosecuted? Of course, this whole thing is also tainted, I guess, by the fact that he faced some allegations of sexual crimes in Sweden for which he's never been charged or even questioned. So I know this is a very broad question, gentlemen, but starting with Justin, what gives with Julian Assange? Hero, villain, or
false dichotomy, bro? Is that what you were setting me up for?
A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is all a perfect example of, again, the tribalistic, collectivistic society we live in that William always hits on. He's a hero if he helps you. He's a villain if he doesn't. And people don't care about the tactics pragmatically because it either helps them or hurts them. And that's all this is. Look, I don't even know enough about his tactics to know if they're illegal, they're immoral, or any of that. I haven't studied the case enough. I'd have to go into an in-depth analysis here. And quite frankly, I don't have the time or the emotional energy to invest in reading about his tactics to give a shit. Let the law sort that out. But all of these people out there being like, is he a hero? Is he a villain? You're not actually looking at the issue. This is another example of you don't have the time. You don't have the energy. You just want to rally your base. You want to rally your team and you want to feel good about it. That's all this is. Conceptually, the idea that somebody founded a website where he leaked all this information, is that a good thing? Yes. We want someone out there using the internet for that power. What were the techniques he was using? I don't know. And I can't answer that question. But conceptually, if journalists are mad about this, they're mad because he's using the new techniques and they're just, it's like anything else. It's like where people get mad at Belichick for doing different things, new things, when they're stuck in the old ways. That's what they're mad about. But everyone else is just mad about if he hurt them or not. That's it. Get over it. If he broke the law, punish him. Go ahead, William.
Well, I've followed this story for a while. It's hard for me to talk about, but I will say that when you grab a bunch of information and you release it indiscriminately, there is something immoral about that. The information that the government protects, even folks who hate the government, even you libertarians out there on liberty.me, there's information in there. At least some of it is being kept secret because it is protecting lives. And when you release the information indiscriminately on the internet, you will kill people. And the information he released did lead to people dying. And that is a consequence of releasing that kind of information. So when we talk about Assange, we have to weigh everything, the consequences and the benefits of what he did. I do not think that this is a good person. This is not surprising to anyone. I think Sargon did a video kind of talking about some of the things he was doing in the Ecuador embassy. Sounds like he was going a little stir crazy in there. Something about feces being smeared around. I don't know. But so you can understand that why maybe Ecuador didn't want him living in the embassy anymore. As to what happens next, I mean, he's been charged with apparently giving advice or possibly tooling to the person who stole all the secrets. So I say the person because I'm not sure if we're supposed to refer to it as he or she. So either way, I'm going to get in trouble. So yeah, it's a complicated issue. I don't see this person as being necessarily persecuted, because you have to go through the justice system before you can be persecuted. And he's tried to game the system in such a way as to not go through that. So we'll see what happens. And he's probably going to be, I mean, he's already in violation of a UK bail. That's kind of their pretext. pretense for arresting him, and he's going to be extradited here. So we'll see what happens. He might not have more information that he's going to leak.
So I will give us mostly just to be contrarian, not because I necessarily believe all this, but I'll give a slightly stronger defense of Julian Assange than what William. Well, William didn't give a defense, but so let me put it this way. To me, unlike the justice system where you are innocent until proven guilty, to me, the government is guilty until proven innocent. The government is force, and the government is so massive now and does so much rights violations to everyone, not only here in America, but around the world, that what they do is necessarily guilty until we know that they're not guilty of rights violations. And they've earned that distinction by being massive, bloated, immoral, etc. for more than 100 years now. So knowing what the government is up to is important. And knowing about secret things that are affecting our lives is important. And yes, I do concur that this sort of mass dump of information on the internet is a little bit reckless and necessarily is going to lead to innocent people dying. But look, in some ways, and I could be persuaded out of this, but at least my initial thing is, in some ways, the moral responsibility for that belongs on the government. Because they are doing shady, horrible things. Things they should not be doing. Violating people's rights in ways they should not be violating them. And if they did much less of that, there wouldn't be as much of a need, maybe no need, for something like WikiLeaks. That's my best defense of Julian Assange. Like I said, I agree with some of that and some of it I don't, but I thought I'd present it anyway.
Yeah, I think that that sums up the two sides of it. And again, I'm not educated enough on either of them to really have a good opinion. But you know what I am educated on? Art. So let's go into that discussion in The Hope for Romantic with JML. Put me into as you've already heard on this episode, Discord has been a huge help this week. The news was difficult to pull together because there wasn't a lot of huge stories besides really the immigration one. And I reached out to you all for help, and Midsider Megan helped me. So get up in the Discord and help influence the show. And maybe you too can get a producer credit on the midside.com/podcast in the specific episode listing. For the review this week, I finally saw Skyscraper on the HBO Go app. Daniel, you seemed a little pre-show. You seemed a little shocked I saw Skyscraper. What was with your reaction?
One of your mantras is that there's so much out there now that's good that we need not concern ourselves with things that we know are going to be bad. And this is one of those things to me.
Like, okay.
This can't be good. It can't be.
First of all,
can't be good.
Wow, you got really close to the mic. Yes. Wow, I felt that. First of all, this stars The Rock, so it can't be bad.
Oh.
No, I mean, look, you're right to a certain extent. This wasn't the greatest movie ever, right?
What?
But here's the thing I appreciated about this movie. This
it
movie
ended?
Wasn't Ted. What?
It ended eventually.
Well, yes, but no, it was intentionally campy. It knew it wasn't going to be good. It knew it wasn't going to be serious, so it just went over the top with everything and was ridiculous.
Really?
I mean, I was calling what was happening in the movie within, like, 10 minutes of everything. Like, there was a line that happened. I go, okay, that line's going to come back at the end, and that's how the problem's going to get solved. And then at the end of the movie, it came back and got solved, and my girlfriend was so mad at me. She's like, I can't believe that was the reason it was solved. I was like, there was no reason for them to have a 5-minute discussion about if your iPhone goes down to turn it on and off again, and that resetting things solves 90% of problems. Obviously, she was going to have to reset something to save the day. And then she reset something to save the day. But no, this was just, look, this was just like, we're going to make a ridiculous movie and we're going to make it and enjoy the fact that it's ridiculous. And you know what? I enjoyed it. Are there better movies out there I could have seen? Are there other things I could have done? Yeah. But if I wanted to rest a little bit and lay in bed while I watched a movie, then this was the movie to watch. If you like The Rock, if you like something being over the top, if you like it being obviously a movie and not trying to look real, then see this movie. There's not much else to say about it. You're not going to hate it. But if you go in like wanting a great piece of work, you're going to hate it. But if you go in just wanting to have fun and realizing it's not high art, then you're going to enjoy it. Well, I'll put it this way, Daniel. This has been compared to Die Hard, correct?
Has it?
Well, yeah, because he's in a Japanese tower and he's okay, trying not to die while there are evil people trying to kill his family. I mean, that's Die Hard, is it not?
It's like comparing lightning and lightning bugs, but okay.
Okay, but it's at least better than two of the Die Hards.
Fine.
So it's better than Die Hard 2 and Die Hard 5, which again isn't saying much.
Look, it came to my attention recently from maybe came to my attention. I'm not sure how that works. From Midsider Conrad that you've yet to see the movie Chocolat. So next time you're just laying in bed.
Did he message you to get me to watch a movie?
Maybe. Why don't you go watch Chocolat and not Skyscraper?
Because if I listen to every fucking person who told me to watch a fucking movie or a TV show, I wouldn't be able to sleep.
It's good, and Skyscraper is not.
I enjoyed Skyscraper.
I get that.
But I was being selfish. Well, do you want me to watch Identity too? And I mean the two-parter in Williams' show over there, the Orville.
Sure. I don't know anything but Skyscraper, really.
Anything but Skyscraper.
Yeah. Speaking of, like, more like Skywalker, less Skyscraper.
Should I have gone to see Dumbo instead?
Maybe not.
What is this stupid movie Chocolat about? Chocolate? Chocolatiers?
Yes, it's about chocolate. It's about how much Johnny Depp loves chocolate.
I can't support Johnny Depp in his spousal abuse ways.
You should watch it. It's a good movie.
I'll add it on my list of every fucking movie everyone has ever told me to watch.
I like how you're getting angry about this when you just watched Skyscraper.
Look, okay, this is what I'm going to say to you people out here. Rather than fucking, well, I'm more mad that he went to you to try and get you to watch the movie. Look, don't just look, people. Oh, it's like when you critique a person's art as well, and somebody goes, oh yeah, I read that, it was good. Or I read that, I didn't like that. Those are the worst fucking responses you can give if somebody gives you a piece of art to give feedback on it. Oh yeah, I enjoyed it, it was good. No, if you're going to tell me a movie is good, and you want me to watch it, you need to give specific evidence that's going to appeal to me as far as why I would want to watch it. Okay? Okay? Does that make sense? Is that fair?
Fine.
Speaking of figuring out things that we want to watch and don't want to watch, every Saturday morning I post the trailers for Trailer Takedown. Did that this week, but as I put in the title, let's be real, you only care about Star Wars. So I'm going to stop talking so we can go through the first two trailers very quickly and then get to Star Wars.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
The Secret Life of Pets 2 is the sequel to The Secret Life of Pets. I feel like we've talked about this before, or maybe I just saw the teasers so much, but I don't think we ever actually used this for a segment, so I wanted to talk about it really quickly. I have the same misgivings that I had about the first one. I'm so sick of this Toy Story model where it's like, oh yeah, let's talk about what things do when we're not around. And now this is about like the emotional well-being of the pets, and they're like going to therapy, and then they're trying to protect the kid when the kid's not around, which I feel like was one of the plots of Toy Story. Like, what do they do when Andy leaves the nest type deal? So there's nothing really that interesting about this. Although I will say, I think Snowball is kind of the Penguins of Madagascar of this franchise. So I might be there for a Snowball spinoff, because him as a super rabbit seemed kind of cool in this trailer. And then him fighting the monkey at the end was cool. But beyond that, there's nothing here. Tackle. Daniel?
Tackle.
as the guy who likes animation, I've never really seen a sequel so blatantly be the exact same thing as the first movie. Many of them are. They just don't advertise them like that. But this movie literally starts off the trailer with things like, we all love our pets, but what do they do when you're not around? Which is the literal exact same setup as Pets 1. So it doesn't seem like they're all that high on their story here, probably because it's a terrible story. And so I'm not high on this movie. Tackle.
Yeah. This looked super bad. There's not really much to say about it other than this.
Tackle.
And Louis C.K.'s out. He was the star of the first one.
Now it's Patton Oswalt. Was the voice of the dog Louis C.K. and they replaced him with Patton Oswalt?
Mm-hmm.
I wondered about that because I didn't remember him in the first trailer.
Second trailer.
The full Lion King trailer was finally released. And here's an interesting sort of take. Maybe it's a hot take. I don't know. I don't know what people are saying about this. But I think I figured out why I didn't like the Jungle Book movie, Daniel. And watching this trailer, it was completely uninteresting. It was completely visually uninteresting. I didn't feel any sort of emoting from these animals. And I think that's because it's shot almost like a documentary style. And I get that, you know, we've talked about before, it's not really live action because all these animals are animated. But juxtaposing it with the Life of Pets, The Secret Life of Pets, you have to anthropomorphize your animals to a certain extent. And I don't think they do that enough in this style that Jon Favreau does for this to be appealing in any way. Look, I'm going to see this movie because I'm curious as to what they do to it and how they execute it because of, you know, how good The Lion King is and how this trailer is so confusingly awful to me that it actually ensures I'm going to see the movie for the opposite way. So even though this trailer is absolutely terrible, it's a hug.
Netflix and hug.
No, I'll see it in theaters, Daniel.
Justin, just very quickly, without super deep analysis, what would you say is the generalized theme of the original Lion King movie?
I would say the generalized theme is learning to respect himself and appreciate his own value so he can go out in the world and do what he needs to make the world better for himself and the people he cares about.
Disagree.
Is that fair?
I would say it's how to become a man. That is what
yes.
The Lion King is.
Well, that's, yeah, okay. Well, that's probably a more succinct way of saying it. I unpacked the underneath of that. Although I don't know how much of gender they actually went into. But yeah, what William says is
well,
in what I'm
of.
Saying.
Yeah. It's all yeah, I would say it's something like learning to find your place in the world or something like that. You have to become who you are. Something like that. And
right.
I think there's all the things you talked about.
And what William said too. I think what William
yes.
said is very, very well taken.
Absolutely. This trailer, obviously it's not the movie, this trailer sets up a totally different theme for the movie. This trailer sets up a have and have nots theme for the movie, a redistribution of wealth theme for the movie. This is the woke king. It is not the Lion King any longer. It is not about finding your place in the world. It's apparently about society and those who beg for scraps versus those who have too much. And even the king says something like, a good ruler is he who redistributes what he has among all the people. It's like, this is the theme of the Lion King?
How do you even execute that theme when Scar's the villain and he's the one who's saying the social justice stuff?
Well, that's part of what I'm saying is I'm really confused about where the hell they're going with this story now. Because that was the trailer. And look, it could just be a marketing piece to get the younger woke generation interested in this movie. And if so, fine. But certainly doesn't make me want to rush out and see it.
Well, Daniel, to your point, there's an interesting element of race in this as well, right? Because in the original movie, like Matthew Broderick and Jonathan Taylor Thomas voice Simba, and now they've made sure the cast is all black.
Yeah.
Except for Timon and Pumbaa.
So, I don't know. I'm really torn on this. This is one of the closer ones in my mind. I probably will see it, but right now it's a very light, tentative, if I learn anything else about the wokeness of this, could tip me in the other way, hug.
Hug.
Yeah, and Justin, I want to make one more thing about The Jungle Book. I actually agree with you very much about the emotiveness and the anthropomorphizing of animals, so I'm a little bit worried about this as well. What pulled me through The Jungle Book and what made it fascinating to me was the performance of Mowgli, the human, the kid.
Right, now you have no fucking human in this movie.
Unbelievably good. So we'll see how that comes off in this. Sorry, William.
Yeah, I want to focus on the animation. Like, this story is told through animals. And when you do it in an animated style, you have all this power to express and emote. But when you... What we have here is a naturalistic animation style, right? Like, they're making the lions look exactly like lions and the animals look exactly like animals. And that actually hampers you from displaying any emotions. How are you going to do that? How are you going to make this visually interesting? It's going to look like a nature documentary. It already looks like it's being shot like a nature documentary. This is going to not work. It's going to make tons of money, though, because it's Disney and it's going to get marketed. Everyone's going to take their kids there for the nostalgia. But everyone will forget this one and go back to the original that's actually good. So I'm going to tackle this.
Tackle? Final trailer.
Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker is the teaser trailer, which I remember when trailers used to be the teaser trailers used to be the actual trailers. I'm actually not looking forward to the actual trailer, but it's the teaser trailer for Episode 9, the end of the new saga, which is crazy to me. I mean, before we even get started, it is crazy to me that they're ending a new Star Wars trilogy already. It feels like they've run through this very quickly, and I immediately thought, well, I wonder what the next saga is going to be, because they're supposed to, Daniel, continue to release a new saga, the main storyline, every 2 years, correct?
That was the initial goal. We saw with the interim movies like Solo and Rogue One that there is some Star Wars fatigue. So maybe they'll take a little time off to focus on the parks, which are opening this year, but unclear.
Right, and there hasn't been anything announced about Episode 10 yet, correct?
Correct.
So maybe they are taking some time off and they're going to build around Episode 9 and let this all sort of sit. Is there anything planned for a side story next year in 2020?
I don't think so. I think
there
was
supposed to be
the
Lando thing, right? But then that got canceled.
Well, yeah, that's so, probably folded into this one somewhere.
Yeah. So I think they're going to take a little time off, maybe 2 years or something, and focus on something else. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, Disney's doing that in
general.
Let's
see how good this does. Let's see what the response to this is.
Right, and they're doing that in general. Marvel's taking a little bit of a break, too, where there's going to be fewer movies for a little bit as well. So maybe that's the Disney strategy. They're realizing oversaturating the market may have been a bad idea. So maybe Disney has some self-awareness. But business strategy aside, let's talk about this trailer. It starts with Rey in the desert, and they show half of the shot of her jumping backwards over a... What is the vehicle?
It looks like a modified TIE interceptor.
Okay, so over a TIE interceptor.
It looks a lot like Kylo Ren's TIE interceptor, but I don't think it is, or they changed it a little bit or something. So,
I mean, maybe. And it cuts away from that, and my immediate thought was, that's awesome! This looks really cool. And then I was like, I'm sure people are really pissed that Rey's that OP, overpowered or whatever. And then the rest of the trailer, like, I was sold the minute they put up every generation has a, what was it? Every generation has a hero or something, Daniel?
Yeah.
Is that what it said? Every generation has a hero?
Yeah, we passed on everything we learned. Every generation has its hero.
Yeah, I was sold on that. And then when they actually used Luke Skywalker's voice, where it's like, no one's ever really gone. And then they used Emperor Palpatine's voice at the end. I was like, I want to see the Force Ghost fight. I want to see Force Ghost Luke fight Force Ghost Palpatine. I would love that. I just think that this was more Star Wars than The Last Jedi. And what I mean by that is we've talked about before, I forget which, maybe it was the Patreon exclusive episode, but we talked about how Star Wars is a saga and it's about the repeating of these elements in an epic tale. And that was completely missing from The Last Jedi. That was in The Force Awakens. It was completely missing from The Last Jedi. The Last Jedi was all, it was social justice. It was anyone can be a Jedi. You know, all you have to do is make yourself aware of the Force and you can become that. There's none of this like destiny, and there's none of this people are more Force sensitive than other people, and there's a genetic component to it. It was just raised a nobody. All of these other poor nobodies can become Jedi too, and we're all Jedi now. So Luke was the last Jedi, and now everyone, the Force is open to everyone. And now this is going back to what Star Wars is. It's about a hero rises from nothing to become the hero the galaxy needs to balance the Force. And the question is, what are the evil elements that need to be balanced, and what does balance really mean? And that was always the interesting question to me that was raised in The Force Awakens. That was the interesting question that we had with The Last Jedi. Were they going to show that balance means more, you need the light and the dark, and there has to be a grayness? And I think that that's back on the table now with the whole Kylo Ren is evil, but he's never felt like truly evil. Even though he killed Han Solo, there's never been like this, like, I've never had a burning hatred for Kylo Ren the way I do for other villains. So I think the whole Rise of Skywalker raises interesting questions, because Kylo Ren is the Skywalker in this tale, unless Rey is somehow, we do the same like twist with Rey and Kylo Ren that we did with Luke and Leia, where they're actually brother and sister or cousins or something. And I think that that's back on the table, what it means to balance the Force again. And this makes me excited for this Star Wars movie. I was excited for The Last Jedi, and it killed, as I said, it killed all my excitement. But this makes me excited again. I want to see this hero's tale. So this is a huge hug for me. Go ahead, Daniel.
Hug.
Yes, all of that and other things in my yes. This, in some ways, at least as a teaser trailer, does what it can to seem like it's an apology for The Last Jedi to those of us who grew up with Star Wars and love Star Wars and were just so utterly disappointed by The Last Jedi and the horrible choices made about the storytelling in The Last Jedi. Even the title, The Rise of Skywalker, after we get the title The Last Jedi, The Rise of Skywalker, almost, you could read into it, and I'm not saying it is, but you could read into it in a very way that we don't want to read into things, as almost a giant F you to Rian Johnson. I don't know if it is, likely it isn't, but it at least gives me some feels, which are not valid interpretations of anything, but they are what my emotions are. So I'm super excited about this. I was very excited, and I thought The Force Awakens was as good a new Star Wars movie as you could make. And I'm excited about J.J. Abrams taking over again. And there are so many possibilities here. I think the one, the redemption of Kylo Ren is a very real possibility. I think bringing the Emperor back could sort of backwards explain a lot of things that didn't make a lot of sense, even from The Force Awakens, or if they didn't make sense, were at least mysteries that were left unsolved. There's so much here they could do to redeem the series into a new generation. And bold prediction here, even the trailer says it's the end of a saga. I actually don't think this will be the end of this story. I think the big reveal ultimately will be that there's going to be a fourth film with these characters that tells the arc. That's a bold prediction, but I think you need another one because there was so little story told in The Last Jedi, so little movement of plot, and in fact a lot of destruction of plot, that you need another movie to tell this. And I would be open to that. I mean, Rey, Poe, Finn, BB-8 are all going to be together basically for the first time in this movie, which is very different from the original saga. So I think there'll be another movie. This will be a quadrilogy, not a trilogy, but nonetheless, Super Hug.
What if they did six movies instead of three?
What if they made one good movie instead of many mediocre and several terrible movies? How about that?
So, Daniel, a couple things based upon what you're saying. Hold on, William. The first thing is about the whole Emperor thing.
Yeah.
I've read that maybe he's Darth Plagueis, and that's what the big reveal is, and that's how he's still alive.
Plagueis?
Whatever the fuck his name is. Oh, the Wise, that guy. The meme guy.
That he is Plagueis the Wise?
Yeah.
That would be interesting. That'd be a huge backwards change to the entire canon.
Right.
So, and then let's get William's reaction.
Who is this character for the listeners? Come on, guys. That's a deep lore pull.
If you've watched episodes 1, 2, and 3, you'd get the reference. So.
It's a meme on the internet. Are you not on the internet? It's a dude who knew how to conquer life and death, and then supposedly the Emperor killed him and learned how to conquer life and death. And now they're saying maybe they're the same character, or maybe that's why the Emperor is still alive. Also, I wanted to say, if you're talking about fuck yous to Rian Johnson, do you notice how Rose was not anywhere near this trailer at all?
Yeah, that is another giant F you to Rian Johnson.
Go ahead, William.
So let's get William's reaction, then we'll take a little deeper dive into this.
All right. So I think all of you all are so hopeful. So hopeful. And I'm going to dash all your hopes right now. Have you guys not seen what Abrams did to Star Trek?
Yeah, he made it Star Wars.
He
made it Star Wars, which is why I liked it.
Him in Bad Reboot have destroyed Star Wars with STD. Or Star Trek. He's destroyed it. Star Trek is over. Unless, by some miracle, CBS and Paramount merge again, we will never see a good Star Trek again. And this
There's
is the
only
filmmaker
one
you're
way to
putting...
have a good Star Trek. Bring back Sisko. That is the only way to save the franchise.
And you guys are putting all your faith in this man who can make visual movies but cannot tell a story, an original story.
Now, hold on. I can't let you on this show.
Wait a minute.
I can't let you on this show say that, because that sounds like something someone would say about Zack Snyder. So we have to be very careful when you say those things.
Look at our, bring up the tape and listen to our review of the first Star Wars in this trilogy. We all said that it was good because it stuck to the saga. It did repeat a lot of the story elements, but that was fine because that is what a saga does. It mixes things up, and it's not based on more like a novel. It's a saga is very formulaic in that way. That's great. But he's been handed a fucking disaster from Rian Johnson. And where can he go with this without completely retconning the middle movie? And that's what we're all hoping for, right? But he's got one movie to do it in. He's got one 3.5-hour segment to do it in.
The big reveal is going to be movie 4.
I don't know that this is possible. Daniel, you said this probably isn't a fuck you to Rian Johnson. It actually probably is. And I've linked, we'll include in the show notes, to a Fast Company article where they exclusively interview J.J. Abrams. And it's not what he says in this article. It's what he does not say. He basically talks about how hard it is to follow up this movie. He says nothing good about The Last Jedi. And he talks about how to tell stories. And the thing that really came out to me was that they had a rough plan for the movies, right? Like, this has been rumored for a while, and he all but confirms it in this article. So it's a really interesting article. You should take a look. If you want a breakdown, Midnight's Edge on YouTube has a video called Star Wars, Kathleen Kennedy and Rian Johnson Discarded J.J. Abrams Trilogy Plans, where he breaks it down a little further. But I don't know why I would give any money to this franchise right now. And so maybe if... Because for the sake of the show, I will go see this. But otherwise, this would be a hard
tackle.
Wow.
I think you're unfairly punishing JJ for what Ryan Johnson did and for the
I'm punishing
of,
Disney,
of Disney
and Kathleen yeah. Kennedy. And yeah, that's I mean, who these stories are about. And just well, I think you'd enjoy this video if you can get past being triggered because they do disparage Snyder a bit in this video.
Then we'll watch
but
it.
It's a fair criticism in a way. They talk about how they attribute it to Snyder when it's really Warner Brothers, but they talk about how without the equivalent of a showrunner for a cinematic universe, that it doesn't work. And so they have Feige in the MCU, but they never – this is me reinterpreting their video. They said that Warner Brothers was trying to make it filmmaker-focused, which meant Zack Snyder-focused, which means it was fucked up. But that's not actually what happened. What happened was they did not let Zack Snyder actually be the Kevin Feige of the DC Universe. And that's
right,
why how it got
was Jeff
out.
Johns came in and tried to make himself the Kevin Feige
exactly.
of the DC Universe,
so if you can,
which fucked
if you
over
can,
Snyder's influence.
Yeah, if you can watch, if you can get past that criticism, Justin, I think you'd find this video interesting because they really hit that point. They make that point very well, that without the equivalent of a television showrunner for these cinematic universes, not necessarily dictating everything, but being in charge of the overall narrative, that you cannot have an integrated view. And I completely agree.
Well, that's
with
clearly
that.
Look, that's clearly what failed about The Last Jedi is I don't know why they gave Rian Johnson carte blanche. It makes no sense to me. There should have been basic rules like don't kill Snoke. Like, do what you want, but don't kill Snoke. Don't reveal who Rey's parents are. The biggest problem there were two big problems I had with The Last Jedi. The first is, it's like he took everything that J.J. Abrams made that was interesting about the first one, and he didn't think of the movie as a trilogy, as a second act in a trilogy, because he was just like, every question you have, I'm going to answer it. And then he answered them in an unsatisfactory social justice way. And that's why I despise The Last Jedi. Because he took what J.J. Abrams did, completely threw everything out, and was just like, I'm going to answer it how I want in a social justice way. And I don't think it's fair to punish J.J. Abrams for that. I think that if you look at Disney, since they bought Marvel and they bought Star Wars, the one fucking smart thing they've done is had J.J. Abrams do The Force Awakens, and they let him do The Force Awakens how he wanted. They've even destroyed Marvel, and we've talked about that over and over again. You can say Kevin Feige is the showrunner, but he's the showrunner under Disney's arm. The problem with Disney is the way they've been running these franchises in the ground, but the one decision they made that was good was J.J. did The Force Awakens as he wanted as a Star Wars nerd, and that's why The Force Awakens, if you look at all of these Disney movies, right? You look at all the Marvel movies, you look at all the Star Wars movies, you look at even all the remakes. What is the best movie out of all of this slew of just crap they've thrown at us?
It's clearly The Force Awakens.
The only Marvel movies that are better than it are pre-Avengers, pre-Disney buying Marvel. And
yeah,
it's because they let JJ be JJ,
so
and JJ's entire life is this.
Why would me giving... you're seeing it as punishing Abrams. I'm seeing it as not rewarding Disney. It's not like Disney's come out and said, I fired Kathleen Kennedy, and now Abrams is the showrunner for the Star Wars cinematic universe. That's not what they're saying. I mean, I wish that's what they were saying. Then I could get behind this, but that's not what they're going to
do.
They
can't.
That's not what they're doing
with
Marvel. What they're doing with Star Wars. They're going to continue to run this into the ground. Lore be damned. Fans be damned. This is about marketing to women. That's what they want Star Wars to be. That's what Kathleen Kennedy has said all along. She's been very transparent about it. And I'm not a woman. Why would I go? I mean, I'm identifying by a woman for the show, but I'm not a woman when I'm not on the show.
I don't disagree with you about Kathleen Kennedy, but at the bottom line, you have to satisfy your fans in order to market to anyone, women or otherwise. You have to satisfy your fans. You have to do things that are right. And I think... putting JJ back in charge of the next movie was as big a mea culpa you're going to get from Disney as is possible. They didn't press it, right? They didn't say, no, really, F you fans, we're having Rian Johnson do the next one as well. They're going back to the person who made the first one work. I'm not saying the first one was a masterpiece. It wasn't Empire Strikes Back, but it was as good as it could have possibly been given the context.
Okay, and that's the important thing, is the context. I agree with what you're saying, William, but in the context, this is the best possible solution. To add on to Daniel's point, let's look at the Warner Brothers example. I would compare The Last Jedi to Joss Whedon's version of Justice League. And what did Disney do in response to their Justice League? Well, they brought J.J. Abrams back. What did Warner Brothers do in response to the mess that was Justice League? They pushed Ben Affleck out, who Zack Snyder brought in. Ezra Miller is going to be pushed out as well because they're going to do a different version of The Flash. And they've gone in a completely different direction where they're having movies make subtle jokes making fun of Batman versus Superman, where in Shazam, the kid's playing with the Batman versus Superman figures, making them fight, and then he sees Shazam and he drops the two figures. So in this world, am I going to completely ignore Disney and be like, you know, fuck you guys, I'm never going to see another Disney movie again where you own half of Hollywood? Or am I going to actually legitimately get excited for something that could be good for me to enjoy, and there's a slight hope that maybe things might go in the right direction after what I've seen happen to Snyder?
I am not one of those people that are saying boycott Disney or boycott Kathleen Kennedy. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm trying to temper this enthusiasm, this unfounded enthusiasm based on the teaser trailer. There is very little evidence. And I actually gave you some of it, right? The Fast Company article, that this is going to go in the right direction. So I'm just advocating temperance here.
You're saying evidence, that article is evidence it's not going to go in the right direction?
No, it's actually evidence on that to get excited. It's actually evidence to get excited, but it's small.
Correct.
That's the only evidence I could find.
But look, the other evidence is they went with J.J. Abrams. That's
yes,
big
they
evidence.
Got rid of and Ryan
but that's
Johnson's
been
not
the
even
plan,
doing
that's
Ryan
been the
Johnson's
plan
not
along.
Even. I don't know if he was supposed to do the third movie. Especially because they got rid of Rian Johnson for even doing the non-related trilogy. He was supposed to have his own trilogy, his own universe in Star Wars, and they even got rid of that.
Look, as
they
bad
can say,
as
they
DC
have
is.
To say at the end of the day, William, that The Last Jedi was a success. They have to defend it because that's what the company does. They have to defend it, but you can tell that there is a mea culpa because they got rid of Rian Johnson from everything. He's
I
done now.
I feel like
this is the nerdiest fucking episode we've had ever with this argument. But I'm going to continue down this path. Say what you will about Disney, but compare them to Warner Brothers. At the end of the day, Disney is a bottom line driven company. And if they realize that they're driving Star Wars into the ground and the $4 billion they paid is going to not pay off in the way they think it is, they will change their course. Unlike Warner Brothers, which is a fucking shit show of chaos and they have no idea what they're doing with their losing heads over here. The guy's sexting and having affairs, and they're just a shit show, whereas Disney actually has their act together. It's just where they think the best way to go is, and they bought into the social justice craze, and maybe they'll go against it now because that will not be sustainable in the long run.
Yeah, I don't know. I just overall think that this is as good a teaser trailer as we could have seen in terms of either accidentally, on purpose, secretly, overtly, whatever, denouncing or retconning or whatever you want to say, The Last Jedi.
I can't wait for the next trailer drop. That being said, and you know that Justin and I will be somewhere at a random theater in Orange County to watch this premiere. So
I go to only AMC now because I bought the AMC pass, so I'm always at the outlets at Orange.
All right.
So if you fucking weirdos out there want to stalk me on Friday and Saturday nights, I'm at the Outlets at Orange movie theater. So there you go. I just doxed myself, I think.
Or the fact that the Emperor is... They showed shots, I believe, of the fallen Death Star. Like the broken up, destroyed Death Star. Whether he's... There is some evidence in canon, i.e. in the Clone Wars cartoon series, that there can be Sith Force ghosts, but they have to be tied to something. Like an artifact, whether the Emperor is a Sith ghost or whatever. I'm just excited that he's back. And Justin, the one theory apparently that everyone in the universe thinks is going to be true, if you look at the internet, is that and this somewhat relates to our whole gray Jedi notion from The Last Jedi that was totally thrown out the window by Ryan F-Face Johnson.
I was thinking the word fuckface. That's really funny. I was thinking fuckface Johnson, then you said that. That's really funny.
The theory that everyone believes is that they're going to take The Last Jedi literally in the sense that they think they're going to retire the term Jedi and rename this new era of Force users Skywalkers.
Yeah, I heard that theory as well. A guy at work said that like 2 minutes after the trailer dropped, and I was like, you already know the basic theory everyone's saying, so...
Yeah, it's like everyone on the internet is saying that, so who knows?
But even that is... an FU to Rian Johnson, isn't it? That he tried to kill off the Skywalkers in the Skywalker fucking... That they're the main saga, right?
But it was subversive. Right? It was so subversive.
Yeah. Oh, so subversive. God, he's such a douche.
So I believe I triggered the rule, and it's clear which one I'm going to go see.
Yeah. So, can't wait. Super excited. Love JJ.
All right. Well, that sums up that. Let's move on to other douches in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. This life really sucks. No, we just complaining. I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. So we talk a lot on this show abstractly about social justice and racism and collectivism, but we don't really see talk about the consequences in everyday daily life of those specific elements. You know, we talk about sort of the lack of individualism on a daily life, but we don't talk about the more, you know, collectivized racial elements. And I, in fact, experienced one of those yesterday, the day before recording this show. So I was at my apartment complex's pool. I was sitting in the hot tub by myself, and you know, I was on my phone, but as I do when I'm in public, I didn't have my phone on or anything. I was just like playing games. The volume wasn't on, and this guy came over and he takes out his phone and he gets in the hot tub, and then he takes out speakers and attaches them to his phone and he starts playing music. So I get up and I put on my towel and my sandals and I walk by him and I go, I'm leaving because that's really rude that you just put on your music like that. And he says to me, you go, say that louder. And I go, but I just said it to you. I don't understand. And he goes, you're a typical white boy. And I go, what are you talking about? I didn't even bring race into this. He goes, this is your white privilege. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is basic respect. You just in public, you respect other people. And he goes, that's white privilege. And I'm just like, are you kidding me right now? You're a racist. And, you know, for a few seconds, I thought of fighting him. But then I just walked away yelling, you're a racist. And I felt bad because on the other side of the pool, on the other side of the wall, there was a family grilling. And these little kids were asking their parents, like, what a racist was. And I did feel bad. But I didn't know how else to react to it. I was really angry and incensed. I had never, like, the idea that white privilege is just wanting basic respect in public. It blew my mind. And this is the first time I've ever actually experienced that amount of racism. Direct, overt racism.
How does it feel to have white privilege for the first time in your life?
Confusing. I'm very confused if that's what they're referring to as white privilege. If that's what white privilege is, then yeah, I have white privilege. And I'm sure some social justice warrior is going to take that quote and be like, oh, a white person realizes he has a privilege. But I feel like that this is, or I think that this is an example of how they convince people that this is all about race when it isn't. That basic respect that's what the melting pot is. That's what integrating into America is, isn't it? It's the idea that it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter your race. It doesn't matter your religion. It doesn't matter your sexual orientation. It doesn't matter your gender, that you will get that basic respect in public. But they've convinced people that, you know, the top 1% does whatever they want no matter what. So because of this narcissism, they think having privilege is just having narcissism where you can do whatever you want. Is this experience insane? Like, does this sound like something that would actually happen? Or does it, I feel like telling this and it being having some distance from it, I feel like it's insane this even like happened. It doesn't seem real.
Seems real to me, in the sense that, I mean, what are all the things we've been told are white privilege over the years? What are the things we've covered on this story that have been called white privilege?
On the show, you mean?
What did I say?
On this story.
Oh.
Well, this is the story of Justin's life, this podcast.
Yes. I mean, things like, remember that asking students to be on time for class was considered to be white privilege and anti-wokeness or whatever it is. So punctuality, apparently being loud in public is just your white privilege showing. And any number of things that, you know, because they I don't even know, do they come from predominantly white cultures, these notions? I don't even know what it is. Like, white privilege to me is an excuse, ultimately, to do something that is socially unacceptable, and then when someone calls you on it, say, well, that's just your privilege talking. No, it's not privilege talking. It's common human decency. It's the ability to look at the world and discern things like, would I like it if I was relaxing and someone played loud music or whatever? That's not privilege.
It's
that's
not
being a human being.
Daniel, think about writing it visually in a movie, right? So visually in a movie, you would want to emphasize the music being played. So the fact that he put speakers out is like emphasizing it. Like, if it had just been his phone, it would have been like, okay, this guy's just like a complete fucking idiot. You know what I mean? But the fact that he actually intentionally brought out speakers attached to his phone, it's almost playing like a comedy, isn't it?
Maybe maybe he was saying that it was white privilege because he didn't have AirPods. Maybe AirPods are only... Does Apple only sell AirPods to white people?
I've only predominantly seen them worn by non-white teenagers, so...
Okay, well, there goes my theory.
No, I think he's saying my belief that I had a right to not be disturbed in public was my white privilege speaking.
Yeah, it's insane. But I mean, I've had people tell me I'm, you know, privileged or whatever. I don't think anyone has used the term white privilege to my face. If they had, I would have played the ultimate check card, which is that I'm Hispanic, but thanks for judging me by the color of my skin, you racist.
Well, exactly. Well, and for me, it added an extra layer because
I've had that exact conversation with people where they've assumed I'm a white straight male, and I have never said, well, I'm gay. I'll say, you just assumed my sexuality, right? I'll just point out the error, right? Because I am so grossed out by trying to say, well, listen to me because I'm gay. That makes me so angry that people, when people use it, that I will never use that myself. Like
I've never, certainly never ever said you need to listen to me because I'm Hispanic. My favorite thing in the world is when a leftist accuses me of being white or whatever, and I can get to go on this mini tirade about how they're somehow my race only comes up when woke social justice warriors talk about it, which leads me to believe that they're racist. So,
well, that's with what you guys are saying is exactly what took me aback, because he led with, "You're a typical white boy," to me.
Yeah.
Like to me, and I, look, I'm a straight white male, undeniable. But is there anything typical white boy about me? I mean, just even think of the phrase boy. You know what I mean? Typical white boy. He's using it in sort of the rap. I don't want to say. You get what I'm saying, right? It's sort of the urban. Urban is the word I'm looking for. He's using it in the urban sense. The typical white boy. You know what I mean? Is there anything typical white boy about me? You know, my dad came from nothing, made himself to a business owner, used that money to put me through private school. I put myself through grad school. I'm not even like a typical upper-class white person. I'm definitely not a lower-class white person. So there's nothing typical about me. So I was just even taken aback by the use of that, "You're a typical white boy." It's like, just because you're white, you're just like every other white person. It was so racist. It is honestly the most racism I've ever experienced.
Yeah. Which, if to flip this on the other side, if it's the most racism you've ever experienced, then we can effectively say that there's basically no racism, you know, around. Certainly, you know, not the kinds of racism that people experience in other countries.
Oh, 100%.
Certain races are jailed, for instance, or certain sexualities are stoned to death. Or even in Europe, the enlightened Europe, where when certain soccer teams come to town from, let's say, Africa, the fans throw banana peels onto the field.
Right.
Et cetera.
Well, so, and to be clear, to add on to that, I'm not claiming victim status or anything. I'm not saying I'm a victim here. I'm just recounting an experience that's interesting.
Yes. Yes. So.
And do you think, though, Daniel, do you think this is, I mean, the fact that this is happening in California, in Anaheim, do you think that, and by the way, I didn't even know what the race of the guy was. I just knew he
that's
was
your white
slight,
privilege.
Well, yeah, it's my white privilege that I don't think about that. I just knew his skin tone was a little bit browner than mine. He could have been any number of races, right? He could have been any from any number of places. But do you think the fact that this is happening now in the year 2019 and in California, do you think it's a demonstration that things are getting worse, William and Daniel?
I don't know. I don't know if things are getting worse. I think certainly the left is more emboldened, but there's always been some amount of racism, especially, ready for this, especially from the left. But I don't know if things are getting worse or if people are just getting louder, or if, I mean, maybe William can make the argument that white is becoming an acceptable marginalized group. I don't know.
Yeah, I think if you're not in the Privilege Olympics, then yeah, you're allowed to be marginalized. And what I mean by that is, I hate using those words because those words all have these collectivist meanings. You can treat individuals like trash as long as they don't meet a certain checklist of criteria. And what we're seeing is people are testing this. They're becoming emboldened by this rhetoric. And they're starting to test whether they can get away with it. And some people are getting away with it. So I think it's fine to call people out, but that's all you need to do. Call people out and move on. That's I think Daniel has given an example of that. Justin's obviously given his example. I've given my example. You know, I just call.
Well, I got a lot angrier than you guys got, presumably. I mean, I was like, yeah, I was like yelling, you're a racist. It was not quiet dismissal. I mean, that is probably my biggest self takeaway from this, that I should have sometimes
remember when someone is acting irrational like that, laughing at them even though you're angry inside is just so devastating to them.
I know, and that's where I need to learn to witness the farce more in my own immediate life. It was just, again, I was just so taken aback. I was just so taken aback that my reaction wasn't that, oh, to laugh at it. My reaction was literally, that's why my first response was, I didn't even bring race into this. I didn't even understand where race was coming from. Which, I mean, that's a good check on myself, because that shows me how not racist I am. You know, that I didn't, that the race equation didn't even enter into my head.
Such a privileged bastard.
I know. All right, well, I'm going to use that privilege to end this episode. Does that sound good?
Thank God.
Racist.
What did we learn this trip? William?
Well, I learned that Ryan Johnson's going to be completely undone by J.J. Abrams, and he's the savior of Star Wars.
We can hope. Help us, J.J.
He's
our only
hope.
Yeah,
in fact,
there you go.
Yes. Okay, there we go. I learned that complicated stories are complicated, but that if you're individual focused and you're reality oriented, you can mine nuggets out of stories like the Candace Owens story, even if you disagree both with Candace Owens and with the people mischaracterizing her. Justin?
I learned that even in bad weeks, J.J. Abrams will release a trailer that will create enough controversy to have a good episode. So I just want to say, at the very least, not to disappoint William, thank you, J.J. Abrams, for releasing a trailer that gave us a episode this week.
That's right. Well, we hope you learned something, and we hope you enjoyed the multitude of disagreement on this show, from Julian Assange to Star Wars to any number of things. If you disagree with us, which I'm sure some of you do, you can tweet at The Midside or all social media of The Midside. You can also go to themidside.com/podcast, listen to past episodes, themidside.com/store to buy merch, including our False Dichotomy Bro shirt. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. Sorry if we offended you this week, libertarians. And then patreon.com/themidside, where you can go to give us a couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content. It helps us keep the lights on, and we really sincerely appreciate our Patreon subscribers. Barring any of that, telling a friend about the show really is the best possible thing you could do to help the show grow. Why don't you give this out as an example of a week in which we pretty, you know, dramatically disagreed with each other on a variety of things, from news to art to politics to philosophy. And this is what discourse looks like. So, yeah. Until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin Obozneski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce. Don't get all angry like I did this week. That's bad.
May the force be with you.
It's JJ or no one, William. That's it. So.
No.
I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
Not true. They could do the real Hail Mary and fuck with everyone and give the next trilogy to Zack Snyder.
Oh, my God. Geez. I don't even think he'd want to do it. That'd be fun. Be a fun trilogy, but it'd be very different. Very different approach to Star Wars. Yeah. Also, The Mandalorian, real life TV show, but that's not what I mean. The live action TV show is coming to Disney Plus in the fall, so it's interesting. Go JJ.